Good morning again. I hope everyone's doing well this morning. I have been revisiting a text by Dogen Zenji called Gakudoyo Jinshu, Guidelines to Studying the Way. One of the things that has become clear during this time is that we have all manner of responses to this circumstance. We might feel fear, anxiety, sadness, anger, resentment, boredom, recklessness, bravado, feeling constrained, defeated, challenged, grateful, peaceful, connected, isolated. They can come together, contradictory things at the same time, one after another, multiple, single, all kinds, every option. So what we can do is stop and think. Who feels all these things? Who are we? How do all these responses relate to our practice? How do the teachings guide us to develop an understanding of who we are, what reality is? This is what we've been talking about these last weeks, Shinshu and I. We want to understand not only how to manage our feelings, we want to delve into the teachings in such a way that they point us to how to use them, how to use all of our experiences to transform our lives and our society. We might think, sometimes people think, that Zen practice helps us to eliminate these feelings. But that is a big mistake. Or we might think that these responses are the result of a self that we should get rid of, ditch. That's also a big mistake, hopelessly big mistake. These responses and the self that they are based in are a part of our reality. And they can either be a gateway to practice, or we can waste our time trying to get rid of them. The self that we have, that we are to a certain extent, is a way of organizing and responding to reality. It is not an obstacle, it is a fact. What you do about that fact is up to you. It's an interesting conundrum, isn't it? The you that you experience yourself to be most of the time is both the vehicle and the challenging to awakening. We don't want to ditch this. It's the way in which we express our commitment to the Buddha way. When we look at the self and practice, we come to understand that the teachings of no self, the teachings that this self is fluid, impermanent, mutable, are not a negation of personhood and all of the goofiness that we can experience. They are a way of transforming our lives, a way of realizing that who we think we are is very limited indeed. And at the same time, these limitations are included. We don't need to eliminate our difficult responses. We can both be kind and solid and grounded and dedicated to a reality that includes them. This effort changes our everyday life. With this effort, we ask, what is life-giving? What is valued? What has meaning? How do I grow my perspective, ground it in the teachings, practice with it day in and day out? when we ask these questions and when we follow through, who we experience ourselves to be shifts. And that in turn impacts how we find peace and worth in our lives. I think this is particularly important for us now. In Gakudo Yojin Chu, Dogen Zenji starts by saying, "The thought of enlightenment has many names, but all refer to one and the same mind. Ancestor Nagarjuna said, 'The mind that fully sees into the uncertain world of birth and death is called the thought of enlightenment.'" Dogen continues, "Thus, if we maintain this mind can become the thought of enlightenment. The thought of enlightenment, bodhicitta, is the aspiration, the orientation, the commitment, and the source of our practice. It is the desire to wake up in our own lives, to wake up not just to alleviate our own suffering, but also to ease the suffering of others, to be a part of the world with others. It is the wisdom that sees that our lives are shared, never apart, intimately woven together, essentially not separate. Even as we have our particularity, we are all the same, interdependent nature. The mind and the heart that fully sees into this uncertain world of birth and death, the uncertain, ever-changing, interdependent world that is our world, is the mind and heart that knows who we are, that knows what reality is, and can live fully in it. This takes place every day in all our activities. It is the kind mind, the magnanimous mind, that Dogen suggests we cultivate. It uses the responses we have to all this as wake-up calls. Pay attention. Look deeper. Cultivate a kind mind. That is the mind that can see, that will see, that can thread itself back to the ground of our being. If we maintain this mind and heart, if we return to it over and over and over and over and over, if we have the courage to see clearly and know fully this world, this mind, our mind, becomes the thought of enlightenment. We become the thought of enlightenment. We are awake, alive, able to act with wisdom and compassion. We are that connectedness. So this is not the self we usually cling to, define ourselves by, and defend. It is a different subjectivity, but it also includes that self. It's a subjectivity that arises with all being. We have agency, creativity, patience, respect for others. We are alive in this world and not thrown quite so much, perhaps. Or when we are, we're not defeated. We return again and again and again. This does not mean we're seamlessly calm and serene. I have increasingly little patience with the image of Zen practice as an escape from the human realm. That is nonsense. We struggle, we get tired, we get cranky, we weep, we laugh, we love. This is the world we live in. The key is we get up. We use our lives to return to stability and deep, deep intimacy with all being. That is bodhicitta. Dogen goes on to say, Indeed, when you understand discontinuity, the notion of self does not come into being. Ideas of a name and gain do not arise. He says the notion of self does not come into being. This does not mean that there isn't some active principle that organizes our reality, our particularity, our history. It means the notion of self does not come into being. He's not saying that we as individual beings don't arise. He's saying we're not fooled by notions of separate, independent self. A self that's prized, that's bloated with self-concern, that's distracted. When we know who we are, there is no need for that nonsense. We are. We respect that life and the lives of others. We walk and act with dignity and generosity. We fall down. We learn. We get up. Simple. Supporting the growth of this perspective takes focus and energy. So we must study right effort. Dogen says in the next line, we should practice the way as though saving your head from fire. Another way this is translated is, or said is, as if your hair were on fire. So the image of having one's hair on fire can conjure up a sense of desperation, frantic activity, pressure. But we know that actually what is most helpful in times of urgency is calmness and decisiveness, not hysteria and flailing about. So when Dogen says this, he's asking us to take our lives seriously, to recall over and over what is most important, to plant our deepest values in the center of our lives and not be swayed. I was reminded of, again, of an image that I have referred to in the past. The image is one of Odysseus. You know, he's on this boat and he's going to be sailing close to this island, I can't remember the name of it, where the sirens call inevitably distract sailors and they crash on the rocks. And usually when sailors go through this strait, they plug their ears with wax so that they can't hear the sirens call and they can stay focused. But Odysseus, being the guy that he was, he wants to hear this. He wants to hear the sirens call. He wants to know that dimension of reality. So he asks the sailors to strap him to the mast and not to pay any attention to anything he says. No matter how much he begs to be let go, no matter how much he says, let me free, I want to follow the siren's call, he tells them ahead of time, don't do it. And so that's exactly what happens. They strap him to the mast and he calls out to them, let me free, let me follow the siren's call, and they don't do it, and he gets through the straits. And he knows something then. He knows something about reality that he might not have known if it weren't for his determination, but more importantly, for his sense of humility that he needed help. He needed something and he needed someone to strap him to the mast to hold him steady when he was distracted, when he was called. Like Odysseus, our habitual self will at times want to and will follow the powerful call of things that don't really matter, things that don't nourish us or support us, whether it's being petty or wasting our days intoxicated by one thing or another, or simply allowing ourselves to forget what's closest to us. We have to be kind and intelligent. We have to strap ourselves to the mast of something. In this case, it is the teachings of the Buddha. It is the way of Soto Zen. We can find many, many reasons not to sit, for example. Again, I'm reminded of one of my favorite authors, Father Michael Casey, a Cistercian monk who says, "It is an enduring mystery to me why I don't pray more." This is a monk. Praying more means returning to what is most essential in our lives. It means returning to what is unbound. To do that, we need to bind ourselves to what is most important. We need to remember, and we need to ask for support. Later in the fascicle, Dogen says, "Freedom from the ties of sound and form naturally accords with the essence of way-seeking mind. Freedom from the ties of sound and form naturally accords with the essence of way-seeking mind." Notice he says, freedom from the ties of sound and form. And also notice that he's using the image of sound and form to point the way towards freedom. We all have way-seeking mind. We all want to find peace, to realize who we are. We often get distracted or confused or turned around or just plain ornery. But that's a part of our lives. In fact, it's beautiful in a way. Perhaps we can see that more clearly now. And we can see that when we are lost, we can return to our deepest intention. In a way, it's a kind of win-win. We either stay close to our inmost request, or we fail, and we find the freedom of true humility. Which is to say, we are who we are. We aren't fooled by who we think we should be. When we fail, we simply say to ourselves and others, "I'm sorry. Let's try again." That takes courage, strength, wisdom. We say we use the ground to get up from the ground. That is the wisdom and compassion of the Buddhas. A little later on in this fascicle, Dogen tells us, just forget the self for now and practice inwardly. This is one with the thought of enlightenment. Just let go of all the goofy ideas we have. Of course we have a self. We have a history, we have a perspective, a narrative. We know what we do and we keep an eye on it. But we are not bound by it. We are not caught by our ideas. We are able to use the ground to get up from the ground. We are able to say, "I'm sorry, let's try again," to ourselves and to others. We understand that it is not a fixed self. It is an aspect of interdependent reality. No more, no less. In the next section, Dogen says, once you hear one phrase offered by a loyal servant can have the power to alter the course of a nation. Let me find that in here. Once you see or hear the true teaching, you should practice it without fail. One phrase offered by a loyal servant can have the power to alter the course of a nation. One word given by a Buddha ancestor cannot fail to turn people's minds. This is an instruction on how to practice, how to live our lives. Our lives can be as complex and multifaceted as a nation. It's like a brass band in a small room sometimes. There's an onslaught, especially in the midst of crisis, in the midst of difficulty, in the midst of wondering, are we going to be able to pay the rent? How is our mother? When will our children get back to school? Should I go to the grocery store today or tomorrow? Is it safe? How do I have peace in the midst of this? It can be a kind of onslaught. and that in itself is path. What is crucial is that we have a loyal servant in our minds and hearts that will speak up, that will remind us of our allegiance, of the well-being, to the well-being of the state. In this case, to the well-being of our inmost request, that will awaken or reawaken in us our sense of orientation and vow, who we want to be in this life and how we want to act. This loyal servant can be very irritating, inconvenient, but also very, very important. So it is important that we cultivate the ability to listen, to hear the voice of this loyal servant, to follow that guidance, quiet, consistent, loyal to us and to our deepest freedom, and to the good of all. This loyal servant keeps us on track all the time if we dare to listen. When we study in this way, we are freeing ourselves from the bonds of what keep us tied to illusory satisfactions. When we keep the loyal servant close to us, when we strap ourselves to the mast of our deepest intention, when we allow ourselves to be supported by the teachings, to be guided by them, to invite the Buddhas and ancestors to quietly, persistently be with us in our day-to-day lives, we remember what this life is about. When we sit and allow the myriad things to come forth, when we allow the self to melt away, all the illusions to melt away for a moment, we can discover who we are. We can remember what is deepest and truest about us. We already are that. We're not making up something new. There's no need to create anything. So I would ask you to consider how you cultivate a good relationship with this loyal servant. How do you make day-to-day choices that reflect your inmost request? No fuss, just simple. How do you use this time to wake up to who you are and what reality is? How do you return to the freedom Dogen is pointing us to? This is a time of transformation, if we can let it be. Thank you.